go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we are at the end of another broadcast week. It's the 15th day of August, 2014. Friday on the front porch, on the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That, of course, is where you'll find access to the chat room. Folks wandering by already. Good evening, Jeremy and Jug of Punch and Texas D. Indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky is on the switch this evening in the chat room. He's also, of course, the longtime never missed a Friday night moderator of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. That's how we engage Friday on the front porch around here. Now we'll be starting the Friday on the front porch roundtable of extraordinary, ordinary experts, probably in about an hour or so. If you have never participated in Friday on the front porch, it's very easily done on Skype with your little old Skype handle. Send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunc. Dang it, the third switch is thrown. Send a contact request to Sparky Dunc on Skype, and he'll get you right into the group. Okay. By the way, also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will find the pop-out Listen Live player. It's handy for listening on a PC. If, on the other hand, you're listening on some sort of mobile device, some iThis or Smart That, then we recommend the apps from Stitcher and or TuneIn. It is entirely your choice. Chose? The hell did that come from?
It's entirely your choice. Give me another drink.
Ah, okay. That explains something. So, give me just one second. We'll get back to things. I got to take care of something. All right, the fact that I'm not yet broadcasting will be remedied in short order. Okay, well, we'll just wait. Stand by. Thanks to Rick Smith, it's not a big deal, but these things happen. Rick is on a remote right now. And those things can get a little hairy. He's broadcasting live from the Teamsters National Black Caucus Convention in Philadelphia. And so I think those things can get away from you. So thanks, Rick. I hope you're having a great broadcast. So anyway, yes, this program is live for those who have written asking. It is the 15th day of August 2014. I went through all of that earlier, but, well, you know. Uh, This is Friday on the front porch. Hopefully folks are still listening. Let me reply to a couple of emails and then we'll get rolling. Poor tired old computer. All right, we'll be done in a minute. Come on. Yeah, you just love listening to dead air, don't you? Okay, well, we'll be there in a second. Okay, so hopefully that takes care of it. No, we are live. This is Friday on the front porch on the horn, and we'll get, as I was saying before the broadcast went out, and see, this is the dynamic tension between listening after the fact via podcast versus listening live. The podcast folks have already heard me say this, and we're going, oh, Jesus, Bob, we got to go through this again? Yeah, we do. It's Friday on the front porch. If you've never participated in Friday on the front porch, then by all means, send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunk, Sparky Dunk. Send a contact request to Sparky Dunk. He'll clear you, and you'll be part of the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable of expert Americans and folks from around the planet as well, I might add, as you wish. And we'll get the Friday on the Front Porch panel going in fairly short order, probably about 45 minutes from now. Let's see. Okay, one quick note. You know, it's always there. The note is always there. We raised precisely no money whatsoever last night, and I mean not a sausage. And consequently, we have a fundraising goal this evening of $310. It would be really, really nice to not go into next Monday with our foot in a bucket. So that's 31 folks at $10 a piece. 62 people at $5 a piece, and beyond that, 31 doesn't divide very well. But anyway, that's where we are. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. So too is the traditional mail address under the tab Contribute. You'll find it there. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318. Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. Remember, checks and money orders should never be made payable to Bob Kincaid, as Bob Kincaid does not see the money, the checks or the money orders. Boss Man Wayne takes care of the bill paying, and when you use the mail address, just shoot me a note, let me know. I'll tell Boss Man Wayne to leave the spider-proof gloves in the box and that he won't just have an echo when he opens the mailbox. Yeah. That Beckley address, you know, that's just our, that's where the mail goes to. And Boss Man Wayne lives in Beckley, and I don't, and it makes things easier, monumentally so, for him. So hopefully, like I said, we will not finish the program with our foot in a bucket. Now, where do we go this evening? Good God. Things appear to be calming at least a little bit. Or were calming at least a little bit in Ferguson, Missouri, until, wow, apparently there are still some jackasses involved in, even though the Missouri State Police or Highway Patrol or whoever they are took over, there was a real sense of relief last night as one of Ferguson's own who grew up in Ferguson took over policing duties there.
And then today, I guess it got worse.
Because in the last 24 hours, they have released the name of the person who shot Michael Brown. But then, I guess in that eternal search for balance, they decided to sleaze Michael Brown at the same time, saying, well, he was wanted in a strong-arm robbery of a convenience store. He stole a pack of cigars, apparently. That's what's being reported. That's what they're saying. There's no proof. There won't be a trial. Because the defendant has already been summarily executed. That creates a problem in the whole administration of justice process. Interestingly, though, this is where the release of that information becomes problematic. They have already also admitted that the cop who gunned down Michael Brown didn't know that there was a want out for someone having burgled some stogies. See how it works? So they'll just sleaze, they gunned him down in life, and they'll just sleaze him in death. There's no proof for this. They still, to the best of my knowledge, haven't interviewed the actual witnesses or witness to the altercation itself that wound up in an unarmed man with his arms raised being shot. But there's stuff to be learned, things to be taken into account. One image that has become almost iconic is of the sniper. The sniper who is sitting atop either some vehicle or some building. He's got full military kit on, and he's looking through his scope toward the protesters, presumably putting his crosshairs on some innocent citizen of the United States. Why? Dunno. But over at Storify.com, a post by Atherton, it's a series of tweets. It begins with Andrew Exum tweeting out in a series, one of the things that has always bothered me most about states' rights libertarians is that in American history, state and local governments have often been the ones most effective at suppressing the rights of Americans, specifically African Americans, while it has often been the federal government that has stepped in from Little Rock to New Orleans to restore both order and the rights of the citizenry. This mess in Ferguson illustrates how dumb local police forces can be. Not just dumb, but brutal. The same individual then tweeted the photograph of the guy, the sniper guy. We don't know who he is. And here's a question, and it's not rhetorical. I welcome dialogue, discussion, debate, whatever on it. Here's a guy with a helmet, body armor, battle fatigues, a tripod, a sniper rifle, a high-powered scope, looking through the scope at unarmed citizens, you know, crosshairs and everything, kind of the way that, well, you remember when Sarah Palin put crosshairs on Gabby Giffords? Yeah, those crosshairs. Here's my question. Who is he? No, really, who is he? I posed the question on Facebook earlier today, and our buddy Horst answered, why, that would be Officer Black Electrical Tape. Because, you know, they try to hide their identities. They're protecting freedom and keeping order, but they run around in ski masks and cover up their names and badge numbers. The writer of the post continues, Ferguson is useful in that it separates those who actually worry about the power of the state from those who just hate Obama and want to wave a Gadsden flag around with their friends. Americans of both parties and all races should be concerned when we see police forces on our streets that look like armies of occupation, not our fellow citizens. Indeed. Indeed. So I wonder if there was an enterprising civil liberties organization, would it be possible to FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, would it be possible to serve a FOIA on the St. Louis County Police Department and find out the name and the rank and the years of service and the orders that involved having this guy point a gun at innocent civilians? Or would they say, oh, no, 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 he fears retribution? Then don't point sniper rifles at innocent civilians! And I doubt there'd be any retribution anyway. One person responding to this series of tweets said, why have your weapons pointed at a guy like that? Military tactic would be to stay low ready. Another individual said, as someone who studies policing in conflict, what's going on in Ferguson isn't just immoral and probably unconstitutional, it's ineffective. An Air Force veteran said, in the USAF, we did crowd control and riot training every year. Lesson one, your mere presence has the potential to escalate the situation. That's a lesson worth learning. When people show up with machine guns and sniper rifles and start pointing them at you, it tends to bring out a heightened emotional state in the people being targeted. Obvious, one might think, but not to the St. Louis County Police Department, for whom there will probably be no repercussions whatsoever. Let's understand that right away. No repercussions whatsoever. No demotions, no firings. And whoever that guy is who kissed somebody on the way out the door to go and point a sniper rifle at innocent civilians engaged in their First Amendment rights, nothing will happen to him. Another veteran writes, a few people have pointed it out, but our rules of engagement regarding who we could point weapons at in Afghanistan was more restrictive than cops in Missouri. Another individual says, we've decided as a society that local police forces need greater armor capabilities than an invasion force in 2003. Then there's another lovely photograph of a member of the St. Louis County Police Department pointing a gun directly at an Al Jazeera camera crew who was not even shooting anything anymore. They were simply dismantling their apparatus. An older veteran says, I don't know how it was in Iraq and Afghanistan, but in Bosnia, we had less firepower while on patrol than the cops in Ferguson. Yet another veteran says, for what it's worth, I led foot patrols in downtown Bakuba, Iraq, in 2005-2006 with less firepower than Ferguson Police Department. Another one says, with a photograph of a St. Louis County police officer, the gentleman on the left has more police more personal body armor and weaponry than I did while invading Iraq. And then this trenchant comment, police have tons of military gear, but they're not exactly militarized. I know of plenty of line infantry units more compassionate than this. Still another, and see, this is, I find this interesting, fascinating, because in the aftermath of war, when the troops come home, they come home with a storehouse of knowledge, understanding, and information that then becomes, in its own way, socially useful. Another individual says, we contained riots in Baghdad next to mosques with less violence than the police are employing. And then with regard to the long-range acoustic device, the last place I saw one of those was at the Iraqi detention facility. Then this. A lot of vets, me included, would go to Ferguson and gladly teach some classes on crowd control and patrolling. You are effing it up. The same person following by saying, I leveled my weapon twice overseas. Leveled. not fired. I had legit threats and went through proper EOF. Stop effing up, Ferguson PD. But we are at hazard if we think that this is a Ferguson Police Department problem. It isn't. It is a police problem. A police problem. How do I know this? From the New York Amsterdam News by Cyril Josh Barker. As the nation comes to terms with the fatal August 9th police shooting of unarmed 18-year-old Michael Brown, more police shootings have taken place. You might want to, and you know, usually we say it sort of facetiously, you might want to get out the duct tape and the hockey puck. This ain't funny. Sit down. Since the police shooting death of Michael Brown on August 9th, nearly 20 fatal police shootings have occurred nationwide. Incidents range from victims who were armed to many who were not. In the Newton section of Los Angeles, an unarmed black man was shot Monday by the LAPD. Ezel Ford, 24, was shot three times by police after they performed an investigative stop. According to a press release by the LAPD, a struggle ensued between Ford and the officers, which resulted in the shooting. Ford was transported to an area hospital where he later succumbed to his injuries. LAPD put out a sanitized account of the incident. A cousin of the victim said, "They laid him out, and for whatever reason, they shot him in the back, knowing mentally he had complications." In other words, he was mentally ill, or perhaps developmentally different. Every officer in this area from the Newton Division knows that this child has mental problems. The excessive force, there was no purpose for it. The multiple shootings in the back while he's laying down, no. Then when the mom comes, they don't try to console her. They pull the billy clubs out. Then this past Sunday, there's the shooting death of unarmed 26-year-old Andrew Scott Gaynor in Dallas. Police responded to a call of a man making lewd comments to women. An off-duty officer who was working neighborhood watch then followed Gaynor, and they said he tried to get into a car with a family inside. The officer commanded Gaynor to move away from the vehicle. Police say Gaynor then rushed the officer who opened fire, shooting Gaynor multiple times and killing him. Interestingly, the Dallas police will not release video from a nearby security camera. ...26-year-old Andrew Scott Gaynor was the father of a 19-month-old son. In this year alone... ...across the United States... 7.5 months into 2014, the police have killed at least 600 human beings. 600. Now, I know that you can't just compare one to one. You can't say, well, gee, how many police killings are there in France? Or, gosh, how many police killings are there in Australia? You got to do the statistical work, for which I am not qualified. And you got to figure out ratios of comparative populations and stuff like that. But whatever the populational statistical correlation comparison, what have you, is between, say, Australia or France or Germany or Italy or Spain or Portugal or the UK or Japan or Mexico or Cuba or Vietnam. Does anybody here want to lay down a bet? That 600 human beings in 7.5 months is a lot higher ratio in the United States than any of the countries I just named? Now, I'm sure it's not higher than Iraq. I don't know if it's higher than, I don't know. It's probably commensurate with Iraq. We've given birth to the nightmare in Iraq, haven't we? But Iraq is a country at war with itself. 600, more than 600 human beings have been gunned down for a variety of reasons. That's not always saying 600 innocent human beings. But 600 human beings have been gunned down or tasered to death or suffocated or beaten to death by the police in the United States of America this year. This year. 7.5 months. What country's police force does that? What country's police forces have numbers like that? Is there a relative ratio that is an equivalent in Sweden? Hell, they're our big boogeyman now. How about Russia? Russia's big. Russia's populous. Have Russian police gunned down 600 human beings this year in the first 7.5 months? Hey, Canada. How about y'all?
I'll save you now.
Have the Royal Canadian Mounted Police and various and sundry other law enforcement agencies gunned down anywhere near 600 Canadians in the first 7.5 months of 2014? Probably not. I'd almost bet not. Of those human beings killed by police in the United States, I don't know if that article took into account Dante Parker. This story was published in the Huffington Post on the 14th day of August. That would be, of course, yesterday at 2:04 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Simon McCormick writing, a father of five died after he was involved in an altercation with deputies who suspected him of burglary. The Victorville Daily Press. And that's Victorville, California. The Victorville Daily Press reports that Dante Parker, 36, was suspected of attempting to burglarize a Victorville home on Tuesday afternoon. The person who reported the burglary said the suspect fled on a bicycle, and according to the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Office, Parker was seen riding his bike near the scene. Wow! Man on bicycle, attempted burglary. So they see a black guy on a bicycle and, well, time. What did Rutger Hauer say at the end of Blade Runner? Time to die. See, here's where it becomes a little sticky. A former co-worker of Dante Parker's, who worked as a pressman for the Victoria Daily Press, tells the paper his fellow employee wouldn't steal from anybody. That whole story is totally wrong. That's just not Dante, said Richard Laredo, a former Daily Press pressman who worked with Parker. Dante's not a burglar. You can see how well his kids were raised. He's a good dad. For the police department to portray him like that is unfair. Then, of course, there's the usual report from the police that he resisted arrest and became uncooperative and combative. The female officer, then trying to apprehend him, repeatedly tased him. They tasered him and tasered him and tasered him and tasered him. Then they handcuffed him and stuffed him in the back seat of the roller. Then they happened to notice that he was sweating and breathing heavily. That's when they took him to the hospital, where he then shuffled off this mortal coil. Yeah, really. Of course, it was a couple of weeks ago in New York City that a big man was wrestled to the ground by the police, and they kept him on the ground until he suffocated to death. They claimed he was selling black market cigarettes. But that's the larger problem. If the cop's having a bad day, or the cop gets scared, or the cop gets angry, no matter the charge, you can wind up dead, summarily executed by the police in the United States on little more than suspicion. If they don't execute you, they'll just rough you up a little bit. Or maybe, like the reporter in the McDonald's in Ferguson, Missouri, they'll bash your head into a door and say, "Huh, sorry!" Yeah. And then there's this. Now, this story goes back to September 20th, 2009. Somewhere around South Florissant Avenue, which has been the central thoroughfare involved in the Michael Brown case in Ferguson, Missouri. Things like this latest round of horror in Ferguson seldom happen in a vacuum. They seldom happen as one-offs or isolated events. Henry Davis was on his way home in Greater St. Louis County. The rain was pouring, coming down hard enough to obscure vision for drivers. It was obscured enough that Henry Davis missed the exit for St. Charles, Missouri, and instead got off the highway in Ferguson. So when he pulled off the road in Ferguson, because of the intense rain, a cruiser pulled up behind him. The police officer approached Henry Davis's vehicle, yanked the cell phone out of Henry Davis's hands, cuffed him, and stuffed him in the back seat of the cruiser. Not a word of explanation anywhere in the process. Mr. Davis, meanwhile, is completely confused. He doesn't know what's going on. When they stuck him in a cell, a one-man cell, somebody else was already sleeping in the bunk, and he asked for one of the sleeping mats, and they said, no, you can't have one of those. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, Henry Davis later testified. Stories at the Daily Beast. Who's going to sleep on a cement floor? These things come from a deposition. Mercifully, Henry Davis was not murdered by the police. No. No, when he said he wasn't going to sleep on a cement floor, the booking officer went and got a number of his colleagues in the Ferguson Police Department. One of them opened the cell door. Another one bulled through, drove Henry Davis inside, and slammed him against the back wall. In his testimony, Henry Davis said, I told the police officers there I didn't do nothing. Why is you guys doing this to me? Their only response was to say, okay, just lay on the ground and put your hands behind your back. So he did. Then a female officer straddled him and handcuffed him. Two more officers came into the already tiny cell and just started beating the bejesus out of him. Then, and see, he'd covered up to try to keep from getting killed. Then the same female officer came back and forcibly lifted his head up while another officer ran at him and, running, kicked him in the head. Henry Davis said, I almost passed out at that point. Paramedics came. They said it was too much blood. I had to go to the hospital. When they got him to the hospital, he refused treatment because he said, I wanted somebody to take my picture first. I wanted a witness and proof of what they'd done to me. He was diagnosed with a concussion. Still in custody, they drove Henry Davis back to the jail. Is this beginning to seem just a little bit Kafka-esque to you? Does this seem just a little bit like The Trial? Is this something out of Camus? Is this The Stranger? Is it out of the Twilight Zone? No! No! It is out of the United States of America, home of the brave, land of the free. So when they dragged him back to the jail, they charged him with 4 counts, no kidding, of property damage. In the civil suit, which has yet to be successful because the federal judge deemed the violations of Mr. Davis's civil rights insignificant, and it's on appeal, the arresting officer, the booking officer, the charging officer, they were all deposed and then testified. Here's how it went. Henry Davis's lawyer, James Schottel, asked, after Mr. Davis was detained, did you have any blood on you? No, sir, Officer Beard said. Schottel, offers him the property damage complaint. Is that your signature as complainant? It is, sir, said Officer Beard. And what do you allege that Mr. Davis did unlawfully in this one? He transferred blood to my uniform while Davis was resisting. This is during deposition, and at this point the wily lawyer asks him, didn't I ask you earlier in this deposition if Mr. Davis got blood on your uniform? You did, sir. And didn't you respond no? Correct, I did. The police officer perjured himself. Other police officers said they never had any blood on them either. Now, this is beyond the question of whether or not getting blood on you when you're being beaten, how can you either intentionally or even negligently transfer blood to a police officer's uniform? As we were reminded so often by the Republican Party in the 1990s, words mean things. Other officers who testified at deposition said that the property damages charges weren't just weird, they were trumped up. In other words, they were false. Police Officer Christopher Pillarick said, there was no blood on my uniform. Officer Michael White, he's the one who allegedly kicked Henry Davis in the head. He said he never saw Mr. Davis bleeding at all. Did Mr. Davis get any blood on you while you were in the cell? No. Perjury. Tell you what, if you're feeling adventuresome, if you're one of those folks out there who doesn't mind a little this, a little that on your criminal record, go try to commit perjury and see if a federal magistrate will rule, as he did in this case, that the perjury was not of any consequence. Then go look up the perjury statute and see if it says consequential. It doesn't. Now, a lot of case law on perjury says that it has to be material. But it would seem to me, would it not to you, that alleging that a person had committed property damage by bleeding on your uniform, when the damage itself is a material element of the charge, wouldn't lying about it seem to be material in and of itself? How did this bizarre situation transpire? Henry Davis. Well, it's not an unusual name. It's not like Epaminondas Throckmorton McGillicuddy the 12th. There's probably only going to be one Epaminondas Throckmorton McGillicuddy the 12th. No, there was another Henry Davis out there. And there was an arrest warrant out for Henry Davis. So when the cop cruised up behind this Henry Davis, who was simply trying to get home in a rainstorm, he ran the tag. The tag came back, registered to Henry Davis. He said, we've been looking for Henry. And the whole nightmare unfolds. Now, the Henry Davis that was charged with a crime, he had a different middle name than this Henry Davis. He also had a different Social Security number. But not once in that 12-hour nightmare and the days that Henry Davis spent in jail did they bother to find out. Now, when the prosecutor was finally alerted to this, well, the prosecutor decided this was not a hill that he was going to die on, and they dropped the property damages charges. They also dropped the felony charge that they had filed against him as soon as they found out that he had filed a lawsuit against the Ferguson, Missouri Police Department. And finally, well, not really finally, but also this. This out of liberal, arguably liberal, Seattle. I do believe. The initial reporting on this coming from a blog called The Stranger. Downtown Seattle, a place called Westlake Mall. And this one gets a little complicated, too. Because it's tied up with other things that have occupied our attention. People all over the country and all over the world have, of course, protested the brutality in Gaza, the indiscriminate slaughter of children, old people, bombings, rocket missile attacks. Yeah. 18-month-old babies dragged from the rubble. And at the Westlake Mall in downtown Seattle on the 9th of August, it's a tough day. A group of people of conscience gathered to protest the ongoing brutality in Gaza. Oddly enough, that has absolutely nothing to do with the story, except it does. So, naturally, where any of these things take place, there will always be somebody there screaming, and any protest, there will be somebody there screaming the contrary. You know, so that Fox News TV Radio Rwanda can show up and say, both sides, blah, blah, blah. There could be a million anti-Gaza slaughter people and one pro-slaughter person. Both sides were present. Enter a young man named Raymond Wilford, a 25-year-old African-American man. Raymond Wilford, 25 years old, was not going to attend the anti-Gaza slaughter protest. He also, I mean, he had nothing to do with it. Now, meanwhile, this guy with his shirt off, the screaming pro-Israeli stuff, all kinds of slurs and epithets. As Raymond Wilford walks by, he begins screaming epithets at him. One of the ones that was at least reported was that he was hollering something about towel heads. Towel heads. But he said something to Raymond Wilford, And Raymond Wilford almost got into it with this jackass. Who was screaming at the people originally who were protesting babies being slaughtered in Gaza. Raymond Wilford, young, healthy, black, initially almost got into it with the pro-slaughter screamer, epithet hurler guy. But he showed real restraint, and he de-escalated. Someone, meanwhile, had called out to the mall cops, no guns, no legal authority, no law enforcement power in the state of Washington, mall cops. And the mall cop comes up and proceeds to mace, yeah, Raymond Wilford in the face. Meanwhile, the epithet screaming pro-slaughter guy slips away. Subsequently interviewed, Mr. Wilford said the security guard was like, stop. The white guy was still yelling and walking towards the security guard. I was like, why are you pointing your mace at me? He's the one being aggressive. And then he pepper sprayed me. And having pepper sprayed Mr. Wilford, he then abducted him. Here's the sound as it was recorded.
Get your hands off him! It was the other guy that was talking with him. He didn't do what you're doing with him.
You fucking maced the wrong guy, man.
Yeah, you maced the...
That's Mr. Wilford saying, "Can you help me? I can't see." The mall cop has already grabbed him by the arm and is trying to drag him away. As citizens plainly inform the mall cop, you got the wrong guy. They don't just tell him once, they tell him repeatedly. It doesn't slow him down because, by God, he's got him a black man.
Fucking idiot!
Get your hands off him! It was the other guy that was talking with him. He didn't do what you're doing with him.
Hey, just fucking maced the wrong guy, man.
Yeah, you maced the wrong guy!
One woman even grabs the young man's backpack, trying to keep the mall cop from abducting Mr. Wilford. He wants badly, the mall cop does, to slam Mr. Wilford into the ground. But because citizens keep intervening, he's unsuccessful. Where, you might wonder, on a sunny day in Seattle, outside a mall, are the police? Help! Police! Right? Wait. Put your hand up on the wall. Put your hand up on the wall. Put your hand up on the wall. By the way, Mr. Mall Cop has his smoky bear hat on, his little white shirt, and mirrored glasses. Mall cops.
Put your hand up on the wall. Sir, put your hand up on the wall. Put your hand up on the wall.
Can you please get me some water? Can you please get me some water? Put your hand up on the wall. He can't see the wall. You blinded him, mall cop.
Any water? Do you have water?
Put your hand up on the wall.
Yeah,
put your hand up on the wall.
He didn't do anything.
Mall cop saw black man and shirtless screaming white man. Willie, of course he maced the black guy. summary justice. Right? Because Merca. Mr. Wilford said, I think he's, and he's the coolest head in all of this. Even after he'd been abducted, maced, everything by the mall cop, Mr. Wilford just said, I think he's real bad at analyzing the situation. He said he got a call for a white guy for his shirt off. He should have paid attention to that person. I don't want to say it's a race thing or anything, because, see, the black guy is never allowed to say it's a race thing, because then America will show up and say, well, you're an angry black man now, aren't you? I don't want to say it's a race thing or anything, but his attention was straight on me. He never even looked at him, the white guy with his shirt off, screaming epithets. Towelhead! After he sprayed me, he lied to me and said he sprayed both of us. Okay, so why not call for mall cop backup and apprehend and abduct both of them? See, even if you're a mall cop, the terms of false arrest probably apply in the state of Washington. Your heart goes out to Mr. Wilford. He described how his eyes were burning. He said he felt like he couldn't even breathe. He said, I was afraid I was going to go into a panic attack. So time after time after time, person after person after person say, you've gotten the wrong guy. You've gotten the wrong guy. You maced the wrong guy. You've made a mistake. Okay, so one of the first people refers to him as, you effing idiot. But he is! Hey, you want to know one of the fun parts? If Mr. Wilford sues, guess what the security company that provides the mall cop can do? They can go bankrupt! Just sleaze right out of a judgment. In the state of Washington, I wonder what kind of insurance coverage you have to carry in order to provide mall copping. Meanwhile, remember, this all occurs when a guy shows up and starts screaming violent, hateful things at peaceful protesters. One young woman said, we were just a bunch of demonstrators protesting the current violence in Gaza and publicly condemning Israel and U.S. complicity. The peaceful protesters repeatedly asked the shirtless guy to leave, and they said, it's a peaceful protest. Why don't you go away? But they never do, do they? Help! Police!
Help me with my eyes!
Okay.
Sir, water,
anybody
water.
Have water? Anybody have water?
Yeah, I have water right here.
How are you going to mess? This guy didn't do anything.
He's cuffing him now. Mr. Wilford's pouring water over his eyes, trying just to see. Now he's got his arms behind his back. Oh, good, a policeman. Now this'll make some sense. The police will restore order, won't they?
Let him do his job!
See, I told you the police would clear everything up. Let him do his job! Officer Friendly? He hasn't been doing his job. In fact, he's been doing the exact opposite of his job, Officer Friendly.
Okay, please help me. I'm just taking a walk. Can you wait, please, until...
Wait till this man does his job and then we'll sort it out. No, you're the cop. Start sorting. In point of fact, officer, you are empowered by state law to stop a crime that you are witnessing. And you, cop, are witnessing a crime. You are witnessing false arrest. You are witnessing... oh, whatever. False imprisonment. That's actually a violation of federal law, for God's sakes. That's the kind of thing that the FBI gets all head up about. Yeah.
Can you wait, please, until this man does his job?
Water in my eyes. We have water right here. His eyes are burning. Mr. Christensen, we have water right here. His eyes are burning.
Let him do his job. Please stop interfering with him.
Then you can free him. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this?
So now they're getting, in front of the cops' very eyes, the mall cops are getting away with the abduction of a 25-year-old African-American man who is guilty of exactly nothing.
I can go in here.
It's private property. You're not allowed in the building.
It's a mall. There's the sign. This way to great shopping and dining. But suddenly it's private property, and the young woman who wants to, you know, maybe she needs, I think I see a cosmetics counter. Maybe she needs a lipstick. Maybe she wants to go for some great shopping and dining. That's what's called being an invitee for business purposes. That's what happens when you open the door. But no, there's Lady Mall Cop. It's private property. This is Washington State. And I'm not gooning on anybody in Washington. I'm not. But, well, I was about to say I thought you guys were better than this. But this is the United States of America, and no one here is better than this. Not better in L.A., not better in Washington, not better in Missouri than they are in Alabama or Mississippi or Texas or Oklahoma. Not better than Boston, not better than New York. Because this is Merca. And this then is fascism. If there is any good to be had out of this, it is that 25-year-old Raymond Wilford is not dead. Not yet. Slog, S-L-O-G, thestranger.com. That's where you can find this. That's where you can find the video. That's where there's a link to the entire series of still photographs. Young Mr. Wilford, who dare not be identified as an angry black man in the subsequent interview, said, I just don't want to be in that area. This is not the first time. The security always harasses people. You sit down for a brief second, and they're harassing you. I've been treated like that all my life, so it kind of brushes off. I'm from the South. I'm from New Orleans. I've seen the worst of it. He really has. He left New Orleans in the wake of Katrina because he lost everything in his world. And he came to Washington State, part of the Katrina diaspora, trying to rebuild his life. At one point in time, the mall cops there even followed him into the restroom and gave him grief for using the handicapped stall when there weren't any handicapped people in the restroom. Yeah, really.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flags
where the mall cops handcuff you and take you the hell away. No, I like Ron and Raleigh's bumper a hell of a lot better. Yes, I do. So here then, at 14 minutes past the hour, we will, in short order, go to the Friday on the Front Porch portion of the program. But I want to put a little information out there. First of all, I want to send out thanks. You know, we entered the program $310 in the hole. Asa and Greg both jumped in, as did Sal, and took us down to $270. And then, and I had no idea this was going to happen, then, well, our buddy Dan, the SIC, the Syracuse Invitational Challenge. Oh, I like the sound of that. Big guy, I'll put up $175 American cash money, every dollar to be matched during tonight's program only. Double your money, folks. That's a 100% return on investment. Great, great, great programs lately, says Dan. Thank you, Dan. Thank you very kindly. So there it is, $175. If we can match that in whatever denomination, and that will take care of fundraising. Now it gets even better, because Sparky, on his own initiative, pulled the pin on the fire extinguisher. The horn pull the pin challenge. So we actually have $275 of matching challenge on the table. If we can bring in that much money this evening, we will have taken care of Monday into the bargain. And there will be an absolute frenzy of bill paying going on around here. So there you have it. If you want to maximize your contribution to the horn, there's no better way than doubling it. And for 27 people at $10 a piece, that can happen, or any combination thereof. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. So too is the traditional mail address. We've got an hour and 45 minutes to get that done in. You think we can? Especially Dan's challenge is centered on this evening, right now, people listening live. Hopefully we'll take care of Dan's challenge and meet that in the next hour and 45 minutes. And then we'll start in on Sparky's, and we'll be good for Monday, hopefully. Okie day, right? Oh, hey, this is interesting. It just turned into a very bad day in Austin, Texas. A state grand jury examining a local district attorney's drunk driving arrest and state financing for a public corruption unit has just handed down 2 felony counts of indictment against good, godly, Bible-believing, upstanding Christian Republican Governor Rick Goodhair Perry. The New York Times reporting, this verbatim from their breaking news report, the investigation centered on Mr. Perry's veto power as governor. His critics asserted that he used that power as leverage to try to get an elected official and influence bug spray Tom DeLay on charges of violating campaign finance laws. Lawyer up, Rick Perry! Lawyer up! So, yeah, let's take a break. Hopefully, folks will respond with enthusiasm to Dan and Sparky's challenges. And we'll fill in the hole that started to be filled in already by Asa and Sal and Greg, and go from there. This is listener-supported Conversation Radio, Friday on the Front Porch. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, watch that sound. Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street, singing songs and carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Into your life it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.
Alrighty indeed. 22 minutes past the hour. And had a little bit of buffering there for a minute. I don't know where that came from. It seems to be gone now. It is Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn. Don't know what our status is with regard to the Front Porch Roundtable of extraordinarily extraordinary, ordinary American experts and folks from points elsewhere. Good call on the bumper, Ron and Raleigh. Very good call indeed. Right before going to break, Texas Governor Rick Goodhair Perry, he from Inward Head Ranch, Texas, delusional presidential aspirant. And of course, what they'll haunt. Well, this is politically motivated. See, I want a Democrat. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't take a crystal ball to figure that out. So we shall see how it all plays out. Thanks to Robert. Hey, Robert, thank you very kindly. Dan's Syracuse Invitational Challenge is now down to $155. Thank you very kindly, Robert. We can take this away pretty quickly. Our buddy Thomas Jugapunch in the chat room just took it down to $125. At that rate, I think we can make some pretty good progress pretty doggone quick. Let's see. Hold on here. Oh, wow. Okay. That's inspiring. Thanks, Gary. Thanks, Laborman. Laborman just said, I'll cover what remains of the 175 by the end of the show. Thank you. So that means that's 125, and that's taken care of. And we can now get after Sparky's Pull the Pin Challenge. Awesome. Just awesome. Remember, if you have never participated in the Friday on the Front Porch group, all you have to do is send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, and you'll be right there, and he'll get you fixed up inside the group, and you are more than welcome to participate. Let's see what we got this evening. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob. You had us all scared there for a minute.
Well, it didn't do me any good either.
Well, it sounded like a lightning bolt hit you on my radio.
Really?
Really?
Wow. Because I just looked up, and I was buffered up on the streamer, and then, boom, I'm out of the chat room. And I mean, I'm not sitting in a puddle or anything here. Sheesh. Never a dull moment. You know, someday we'll have one of those, you know, 50 down, 25 up pipes. Sure would be nice. But, you know, I don't know if other people are experiencing it around the country, but around here, there's been a lot of just electronic weirdness. My cell phone carrier used to be really, really solid. Now it's sketchy. It used to be you could drive up and down the road near where I live here, and you'd never lose service, never lose signal. Disappears. We had, for a while there, we had pretty nice LTE service on my cell carrier. Now it's degraded to 4G. And if you call them and you say, hey, guys, you got a problem, they go, really? How about that? And so, oddly enough, they still like to have the bill paid, though. Who knew? Let's see, who have we got this evening? I see Sergi's joined the conversation. Good evening, Sergi.
Good evening, Bob.
And is that Waggy back from his long sojourn?
No, I'm not back.
Oh,
I'm in Madagascar.
Holy cow, Waggy! We've never had a call from Madagascar. Man, you get the long distance toaster tonight.
Yeah, how about the Southern Hemisphere too?
Okay, so we've had the Southern Hemisphere, but never cool. Never that part of the Southern Hemisphere.
Excellente.
Well, I think the spotlight just landed on you. Please, a report from Madagascar for those of us who will never get there.
It's winter. The stars look colder. I don't know. I've just been having fun with lemurs and monkeys stealing my lunch, and haven't kept up with the news too much.
Let's see. Frank Zappa had the famous album Weasels Ripped My Flesh. You're going to come home and follow up with Monkeys Stole My Lunch.
Yes.
Okay, just checking. So, I mean, gorgeous, exotic, staying in the hotel mostly, I mean...
It was a 16-hour road trip up to Isolu National Park, where the lemurs and rainforest and monkeys and such are. That was one heck of a road trip. All mountain roads. Most of it was road. Some of it was more pothole than road.
Some of it occasionally reduced to track?
Yeah.
Now, when you say mountain road, I think mountain roads can be pretty interesting even here in Appalachia, but I'm guessing really interesting mountain road for you, right? You know, drop-offs and holy crap, look at that, you know, kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, and there was something that had gone down the ravine that they were trying to pull out, and we did manage to get a flat on the way back. And when you rent a car here, it comes with a driver, which is really good, because you know, the line in the middle of the road that you can see sometimes isn't even really a suggestion.
Doesn't even qualify as advisory.
No, you just kind of the people just kind of drive wherever there is road, and it's quite an experience.
Wow!
Which side of the road is it?
Right side, but our driver seemed to prefer left. Right side is like illegal and official.
So, I'm trying to work through this here. So the stripe is an aiming device.
It's kind of in case you actually do have another car on the road, it gives you an idea of how many cars will actually fit across because sometimes the edges are kind of gone.
Whew. So I'm woefully ignorant. When you went up in, is this like mountain rainforest jungle or temperate jungle or temperate mountain forest or what?
Yeah, most Madagascar is mountains. It's just a bunch of mountains sticking up out of the ocean in the world's largest island. Although we did find a flat place just before getting to the rainforest. The rainforest was in gullies in between the mountains. So the mountain tops, actually, driving up to it, it looked a lot like Texas, complete with prickly pear cactus growing all over the place. But then when you get down into the mountains and into the ravines, it's rainforest. A lot of it, though, has been deforested. You can tell by the very bright red soil that it used to be rainforest, you know, maybe 100, maybe 1,000 years ago.
So it does. Let me back up then. Does it look like it's been industrially deforested, or change over time, or by human habitation, or
by humans over long periods of time? Entire valleys, one after another, are terraced for farming, all the way from the top to the bottom. You know, terrace after terrace after terrace that's been carved into the mountain.
Is it the same sort of terracing like one sees in the Andean areas of Peru,
yes.
Ecuador?
And some friends of mine from Colombia said that the photos, remind them a lot of Colombia as well.
Yeah, I was thinking about that very thing last week when we were out shooting video for MSNBC on at some mountaintop removal sites. That is something, that terracing is something that they try to do with the valley fills in mountaintop removal areas. And then they take what they say that it's called stream replacement, and it's a whole bunch of crushed boulders, just a white stripe down the middle if you ever look at it. But the funny thing is, it's a in a mountainous area, it's a brilliant farming technique, isn't it?
The way it looked like it was used here, that it seems natural springs kind of seep up out of everywhere. I have the same kind of idea where the terraces catch the springs as it comes off and lets the water go from terrace to terrace to terrace. There's a lot of rice farming here, so a lot of the terraces are submerged. But then on the upper ones that are a little bit drier, this is the middle of winter here, so they're making huge cabbages and carrots, potatoes, and a lot of
winter
crops in Texas.
They got four-season farming then?
I'm guessing so. I've only been here now, but yeah.
That's because with the terracing they build here in Appalachia, ain't nothing never going to grow. Sad. It's just sad. I don't mean to compare everything to mountaintop removal. It just happens to be my frame of reference, Waggy. There might
be a comparison, though, because the former rainforest soil isn't even really soil. It's just clay and rock. All that matter is in the biosphere. It's in the rainforest itself. Once you take that away, there is no soil left. It's very much like what you end up with mountaintop removal.
Is it
heavy.
Is it very far down to the rock layers then?
Aluminum.
Oh, aluminum. Oh, that's nice when it washes into streams.
It is the rock. Yeah. Yeah, loads of fun. But it's turned into farmland.
Wow.
Through terracing. And I would assume, again, I don't know, but I would assume bringing in organic matter for fertilizer in some source.
But central to all of this is the fact that there is a water source, like you described, you know, springs bubbling up, that kind of thing.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, those are gone.
Yeah, you can tell places where the patterns have changed or the seepage patterns have changed because there are abandoned terraces, you know, that are just not even really grass growing on them. Just
so for just how there. How much longer are you there, Waggy?
Another 10 days, I think. This is like the halfway point.
That's amazing. And so you, what kind of a route did you take to get there?
I don't know, one highway to another.
No, to get to Madagascar. Smart aleck.
Oh, the flying route. Oh, I flew in, I visited my family in Cleveland first, and then flew out of Detroit to Paris, and then to Antananarivo, the capital city. Going back is a little bit more interesting. I'm going through Nairobi and then to Amsterdam.
You have a layover in Nairobi?
Yes. And that requires a transit visa. And if the layover ends up being overnight, a yellow fever vaccination.
Is the layover overnight?
It's not supposed to be. But they had a devil of a time confirming that flight to Amsterdam, so I'm keeping my fingers crossed. It's
so was that self-inflicted?
That was to keep the price down.
Yeah.
Going back the same way I came would have cost another $2,000 more.
Whoa.
Yeah, almost doubling the price of the entire ticket.
Wow. I trust you're taking lots of pictures?
Oh, yes.
You'll be sharing?
Yes, some of them are on Facebook, but I haven't put a lot up because Wi-Fi here is, well, especially where we just were in Isola was pretty much not. But back here, yeah, we're still sorting through pictures and putting some up.
So are you trying any cultural immersion, that kind of thing? How's the food?
Food is incredible.
Is it what we would recognize as like Indian cuisine or? More African, or
it's more states.
I'm sorry, I think we lost.
I'm sorry, French.
Oh, nice.
Am I pointing?
Bob, Roger came in. He's not muted. Something's going on.
Okay, it's more French based. French cuisine with all kinds of local variations, and Indian variations, and the Chinese variations, and those are the most common ones that I've seen so far. The hotel that we're at here in Antananarivo has an excellent chef.
does it seem fairly socially stable?
Hard to say. I can't really tell what the political situation is. The official State Department website says that the current government overthrew the legitimate government in a military coup some years back, but there are regular elections, so I'm still trying to figure out exactly what the politics are. The social situation got worse last year because of famine caused by locusts that wiped out the crops, which is why I was paying a lot of attention to the farming going on. It seems everything's green and growing and good this year.
Well, I both envy and admire your adventuresomeness, and you know, hell, a layover in Nairobi will be fascinating in its own right. You know, we've got a good friend down in Texas who runs the Waco Friends of Peace, our buddy Dr. Allen, and he told me once that he's a physician, and he told me about his adventures when I was down there visiting. His adventures, he goes annually to, often Kenya, and volunteers his medical expertise. And, they were absolutely captivating stories.
Yeah, it's definitely been interesting. I'm learning a lot. And it's always interesting, too, just to find out how much you learn about your own country by going to another one. You know, some things are different, but you know, people are people.
What's the language? Did that get through?
I got the what's the language part.
Yeah, that's all I asked.
Official languages are Malagasy and French. Malagasy is spoken in many different dialects, some of them actually incomprehensible, or unintelligible, that's it. But the main Malagasy dialect is pretty widespread. I'm learning some of it.
Oh, nice.
I came here to meet someone and her family, so I've been hanging out with the locals, not the tourists.
Oh, that's the only way to learn. It's the only way to
experience. That's the way. Yeah, that's the way I like to travel, is to try to get somewhere and really be in the place, not just skim over it. I even got to go swimming in, speaking of total immersion, in a river in the rainforest.
Oh.
So, wow. If there are any, yeah. There are pictures. I'll try to post the ones that, I wasn't prepared for swimming, so I'll try to post the ones that are decent.
Wonderful. Yeah, you just got a query from Marty out on the West Coast. He says, what, he doesn't have a Flickr account?
No, I don't. I guess I got to add that to my list.
Because Waggy, what you really want to be doing when you're having the trip of a lifetime is sitting around uploading photos onto a computer server. I mean, God knows that's what I would be doing if I had it. You know, do I take a dip in the rainforest jungle pool, or do I sit around uploading photos? Yeah, any day, I'm uploading photos. That's definitely what.
There's one time to do it, and that's at after you finish a 16-hour road trip straight, have a nice meal prepared by a really excellent chef, and then you can sit around and upload a few pictures before sleep.
And then try to do another adventure the next day.
Good idea.
Yeah, no kidding.
I need to get some more of that local cheese.
Cheese?
Fromage Malak. Cheese, yes, Zebu.
Oh.
Is it spicy?
Oh, actually, that's what I meant to report in the food porn section. The hot sauce here that's pretty much ubiquitous seems to be based on a pepper that's much like the habanero. It's really, really hot and has that serious piquancy to it.
Oh.
Yeah. It's kind of smoky, really hot. Just put a drizzle on pepper, really good stuff. Put that on just about everything.
Our butcher shop sells this stuff. It's called ghost cheese.
Oh, made with the ghost peppers?
From India?
Yeah, Botulokia.
Yeah. Oh, man. I didn't have to try it, but everybody that eats it goes, man, is that hot.
Oh, that sounds really wonderful.
I'll send you some if you want.
Would it travel?
I don't know. I'll see. They vacuum pack it for me.
Cool. That'd be yummy. Hey, Roger wandered in. Good evening, Roger.
He might be cooking. He's got listening. Supposedly be listening.
Okay.
And then Larry is occupied with his caregiver for a few minutes.
One thing. Hey, Sergi, you said you had some good news a couple of nights ago.
Yes, I'm not sure if I'm still being able to be heard clearly, Mac.
Yeah, we hear you. You're loud and clear. Loud and clear.
Okay, well, Wendy Davis is catching up to Greg Abbott, according to the latest polls. She has gone from being 13 points behind to being 8. And it's only August, so, you know, hopefully the wind can stay at her back.
That is good news. 8 points is not that brutal a deficit to make up. Do you think the Rick Perry news will have any impact?
What? Okay, so I'm sorry. I've been so out of it the last few days. It appears I've missed that news.
He just got indicted.
Rick Perry. Okay, come on. It's not Christmas yet.
No, he did. 2 counts.
I'm going to have to Google that.
Travis County Grand Jury, I think. It all stems from him trying to strong-arm the prosecutor who was in charge of the anti-corruption unit.
Oh, how ironic.
How delicious. It's delightful. It's delicious.
Wow,
it's lovely.
Christmas in August. Oh, well, I hope this blows up. I hope that. Because, you know, oh, man. Because, this is a perfect time for all this because it just came out, okay? And, in fact, this is another thing I was going to mention. The first major TV ad release of Wendy, you know, charged out of the gate first on that. Because it, and, you know, because of that ad, it has come out that Greg Abbott when he was a justice on the Texas Supreme Court back in 1999. Okay, so a little bit of background. In 1993, in Seguin, Texas, there was a door-to-door vacuum cleaner salesman for Kirby, right? And he, you know, knocked on this woman's door and said, you know, did what the salesman, you know, did what salesmen do, you know. And he said, you know, do you want an in-home demonstration? Well, she accepted, and she let him in, and he ended up raping her. Turned out that he was a convicted sexual predator. He was currently on probation at the time. And Kirby failed to do a background check on him, right? So the victim and her family sued Kirby and said, you know, because, you know, it's like y'all failed to do a background check and I got raped. Well, it made it all the way to the Texas Supreme Court, and they ruled 6-3 in favor of her and said, yeah, Kirby is responsible for not doing a background check. You know, they held Kirby responsible. But one of the three dissenting justices who wrote, in fact, he wrote the dissenting opinion that said Kirby had no responsibility to make sure that there were not rapists amongst their ranks of door-to-door vacuum salesmen was Greg Abbott.
Well, another salvo in the Texas War on Women. The Texas GOP War on Women. Oh, golly Moses. Yeah, because that would be, what, a job-killing, rape-preventing regulation? Is that how that plays?
And, I mean, it was Democrats and Republicans. That was a bipartisan decision that sits judge, you know, majority. It was both Democrats and Republicans, but it's just like Greg Abbott was like, nope, you know, I'm not going to be one of the rational ones today. I'm just going to, you know, say Kirby had no responsibility. And, you know, the ad has, you know, been playing on, you know, I've seen it on TV myself a few times here in North Texas, you know, on Channel 8 and Channel 11. And it's like, you know, Wendy Davis is not going to let any of Greg Abbott's, you know, skeletons go unnoticed because he has a lot of them. And the debates are going to be all awesome. Let me just say that much because she's definitely going to bring up the Kirby thing again because it's just the... tad bit relevant, you know. And there's also, you know, the, you know, invasion from Mexico. I wish I had your reverb.
Wait. Here, Sergio, I'll do it for you. Stand by. Invasion from Mexico. All better? There we go. Oh, Sergi.
Sorry, I'm back. My connection's trying to hiccup again, but I guess it's...
Yeah, I think it is getting a little hiccupy.
Just a little break. This is Roger. Can anybody hear me?
Gotcha, Roger. Roger.
Thank you. Now I'm going to go downstairs and give it another test, and I'm working on dinner. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. Save a spot for us.
Everybody's working on something.
Yeah, I'm just working on keeping this little program together.
No, my stepson has been down visiting. He's been out in the shop. Working on the old lathe, see if he can get it running.
Oh, neat.
But he says the belt is too stretched on it.
Should that be replaceable, or is it so old that it have to be specially made?
Yeah, it probably have to be specially made. It's a wide belt that you can... The lathe has like a transmission on it, and it runs at different speeds, and then it has different belt drives on it. I'll send you a picture sometime. It'll all become clear.
Frequently, you can go to Napa with the old belt, and they can match it up to something new.
Well, I think he's talking about the one, Roger. It's the actual drive belt for the head of the lathe, the chuck. And it's like 2 inches wide.
That almost sounds like he's got one of those old lathes that worked off the overhead steam-driven power system number.
Yes.
Because I had a drill press that ran off of that.
Let me back up a minute. My uncle gave my dad that lathe. Came from a place in Nevada City called Miner's Foundry and Manufacturing, where they made the first Pelton wheels. I mean, I would imagine it's a lathe from the early 1900s, and it's been modified. My dad put the transmission on it. It's got the gear shift and everything sticking out of it.
Well, being somebody that runs a bunch of antique crap, I understand what you're talking about. But with a little ingenuity, virtually all of that stuff can be made to work off an electric motor.
Mm-hmm. Well, it has an electric motor on it. But I was just using that as a metaphor. We're all working on something.
Oh, hey, just a little bit more fun. Back to Rick Perry for a second.
Yeah.
The two charges on which he was indicted were, and Beth posted this on Facebook. Thanks, Beth. He was indicted for abuse of official capacity and coercion of public servant. Now, here's where I hope Sergi has a good connection, because we won't need Skype. We'll be able to hear him cackling just by stepping outside. If he was to be convicted on both counts and sentenced to the statutory maximums, he could be imprisoned in the Texas. Let's put it officially. He could be committed to the custody of the commissioner of the Texas Department of Corrections for the next 109 years.
Christmas time is here.
Well, being generous, I'll give him a 10% discount.
I think Waggy's logging out with that news, you know.
Well, Texas T in the chat room said they're dancing in the streets in San Antonio.
Well, that's where Waggy lives. So.
Now, it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Oh, and I wanted to tell Sergi, in the midst of all of this craziness, Sergi a few minutes ago mentioned the border, the border, the border! Well, I got a little bit of sound here. We got to go to some right-wing hack named Tim Constantine, who sat down for an interview with God's gift to Democratic campaign consultants, Louis Gohmert. I'm going to mute the Skype group for a minute just so I make sure that everything comes through. If you guys can't hear it, I'm sorry, but this is precious. Remember, we're worrying about
You're
the
listening
border.
To America.
Yeah, and wow, these guys got production values. They must be bona fide.
Being irresponsible.
I want you to hear the intro. I mean, this is flashy, you know. I wish we could do stuff like this. Instead, we just have earnest, straightforward, serious conversation. Oh, well. This is what happens when you sell your soul to the Koch brothers, I guess. But still. Here we go. Enjoy. Just enjoy.
You're listening to America's Voice of Reason on TPNN.
Good afternoon, everybody. Hi, there is Tim Constantine. Will you?
Now, what is TPNN? TPNN is the Tea Party News Network. I'm surprised it isn't accompanied by the sound of a whoopee cushion. But anyway, so Tim Constantine, I was wrong, I thought it was Constantine, no, it's Constantine, decided to have a little sit-down with Louis Gohmert.
On the Capitol Hill Show, brought to you by our good friends at TPNN.com. You need the latest news, the unvarnished truth. It's TPNN.com. All right.
Oddly enough, TPNN also works if you want to call it the Toilet Paper News Network.
You've heard the stories for weeks now.
Oh, shut up. Let's get to Louis Gohmert. Here he is.
Well, I'm set up to take the tour of that the Homeland Security gives down there, and another guy said, let me tell you, I did that tour, and then that night I went out with Louis to the border, and I didn't learn anything until I went out with Louis to the border. And then another congressman said, oh, yeah.
Is that what they call it now? They used to call it wide stance, but no, now it's called going with Louis to the border.
Yeah, I made that tour.
I'm glad he agreed. Yeah.
With Louis, and I made the other tour. You got to go with Louis to the border because that's when you really see what's going on.
See, my analogy.
And you get down there in the middle of the night, it's amazing. It looks a whole lot different than it does in the daylight, and it doesn't look great in the daylight. But especially down south of McAllen and Mission, down in South Texas, the river is not where you can walk across it most places, and that's why.
Unless you're a savior or something.
They use rafts, and actually, it can be controlled. And since Texas put troopers down there on the banks, and also added game wardens, and also I don't know if all of our Texas Rangers are that big now, or if it's just the ones they're sending to the border, but they cast a giant shadow, and actually where we put people on the banks, nobody crosses. How about that?
See, I have this thing where...
Well, I'll be dipped. Tell us more, Louis.
Didn't tell him, well, that's true, but we were told to say that we were fleeing gang violence. Look, it is violent in Central America, but the reason they're coming is because the president got word out, beginning with the deferred action on childhood arrivals, DACA. That's the law that didn't pass the House, didn't pass the Senate, didn't pass Congress at all, just passed his lips and supposedly became law. Because that's what happens when a monarch, says a law, well, that's the law.
Really? Really? He's acknowledging that Barack Obama is king of America. No, I'm not going to cue up the famous Elvis Costello ballad. I ain't. Brilliant mistake? No, not gonna.
But anyway, that's what started drawing them in here. And they beat around the bush. No, that's not what did it. But eventually they've come around to admitting, well, yeah, that is when the mass migration started. And that is really what's caused it. It's not a spike in violence in Central America. I mean, the people...
So there's no gang violence in Central America. It's all Frisbees and wheat checks, and the Kenyan Muslim anti-colonialist with a deep-seated hatred of white people is just trying to bring little children in here to spend all their lives in America and take away all the crab legs from poor Louis Gohmert's constituents and, oh, my God, casting aspersions on his asparagus. Whatever shall we do?
In Chicago, maybe they deserve asylum, to get away from violence.
Right.
But that is not a basis of asylum is not that your country is violent, because otherwise you have to take everybody in that country. That's not a legal basis for asylum in the United States. You've got to show that you're being persecuted because of your religion, your political beliefs, something other than I live in a violent country. That is not a basis for asylum.
Well, if violence is being done to you for your religious beliefs, then violence is the basis for that asylum. See, it gets a little confusing for Louis after a while. He tires easily. Let's see here. Keep going, Louis.
Called the Border Patrol in the U.S. I said, now what? He said, we're their logistics. They call us their UPS because they get them to the border, and then we get them to wherever they want to go. So we're their logistics. They just get them to us, and then we get them where they want them to go. Maybe it's a relative. Maybe it's not. How do you know? There's, you know, unless you do DNA testing,
right.
And money or the time to do that. So under.
Oh, Jesus, what an idiot. I'll spare you the rest, except to say that he did go on to describe what the Border Patrol agents, who exist only in his own imagination, told him, namely, they see people coming across as undocumented Democrats. And so they want to keep the surge of people coming in illegally, even though it includes a big spike in other than Mexicans, OTMs, as we call them. It includes a spike in people from countries where terrorism abounds. We have people coming in from countries where Ebola is located. And, gee, since they're coming across our border, you know, they don't get checked, and most of them don't get really thoroughly checked, and they could be coming in with disease that we simply do not need. Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God. And what has Steve King started referring to people of color as? Continentals. Yeah, continentals. No, I'm not kidding. I just had to share that, guys. I'm sorry for the interruption. I'm done now.
What is it about August? The morality seems to flow.
It ain't the heat, it's the humidity. Is that what it is? Or maybe. It gets pretty. It gets humid in Washington, D.C., and, Sergi, doesn't it get kind of humid in that whole first congressional district of Texas area?
All right, can y'all hear me this time?
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I went outside. Hopefully I get a little bit of better signal here. Yeah, Louis Gohmert's district is basically in the third, because Texas, is like one-third desert, one-third prairie, and one-third subtropical rainforest. Louis Gohmert's district is in that subtropical rainforest third.
Wow. Yeah. So maybe Louis's brain's been baked. Who knows? Who knows? Good news, by the way. I was just going to put out there that we're $20 toward meeting Sparky's Pull the Pin Challenge. And thanks very much to Haley and to Diane for getting us there. So only 8 more folks at $10 a piece, and wow, that's awesome.
No fundraising Monday, then?
I can do, well, I don't know. It's up to y'all. We can fundraise for Tuesday on Monday, or I can just shut up for one day.
No, go for it, Bob.
Yeah, if I may mention, yeah, I just went on Facebook to the local media websites, local media pages, you know, where they posted the breaking news about Rick Perry's and died about an hour ago. And, oh my word, the conspiracy nuts are out in full force talking about President Obama right now. Obama is trying to take down Perry.
Oh, he's probably going to have him taken off to one of the FEMA re-education camps, don't you figure? Oh, and,
Sorry about that. Yeah, Battleground Texas is image of it. I'm going to share it on my Facebook for anyone who has me at it. Their image is just priceless. Governor Perry indicted, and below it just says, oops.
Didn't you put a map of the FEMA re-education camps on your Facebook page the other day or something, the districts or something?
Yeah, well, I think I commented on something. Somebody Somebody posted up some lunacy about showing the various regions for FEMA, and all I said was, listen, this is obviously wrong because everybody knows that anybody who's seen the Hunger Games knows that Appalachia is in District 12, and they've got us in District 2, so it's a lie. Region 2. But, no, it's districts. They're coming to get us.
Can I tell a feel-good story?
Absolutely.
Okay, I live in a 50s-style suburban subdivision out away from the city. I mean, my neighbor's a rancher, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I look out the front window today, and I see his two dogs running down our street from the ranch. And I said, oh, boy, those guys are in trouble. They're lost. So I go outside, and then my neighbor comes out from down the street and goes, you know who owns these dogs? And I said, I sure do. So I said, I got his phone number in the house. I go give him a call. So I give him a call. And he says, well, I'm not at the ranch right now. He says, can you load them up and pack them out to the ranch for me? And with my stepson here, I said, oh, well, we'll give it a try. So we got one of the dogs in the back of the truck. The other one, we got it back through the fence, into the pasture, and headed home for the ranch. And so we took the other dog around, drove him all the way out to the ranch house. And when we got to the ranch house, the other dog was sitting in the front yard. As soon as we let the younger dog out of the back of the truck, he just went over right over to the grass in front of it's like an old 1920s style ranch, stucco ranch home with a hell of a nice front porch on it and a concrete stairway and it's got two arms that come out from on either side of the stairway where you can put potted plants as you step up to the front porch. And the front porch has got a thing where you can put potted plants all the way around on a ledge, and you can sit out there and look out over the property. So that's my feel good. I got the ranch dogs home today.
Save the ranch pups. Well, you know, that puts a little polish on your halo.
Yeah.
What's going on with the fire watch out there?
Everything's kind of calmed down, I think, except the ones up where my stepson lived. I mean, that's all out now, but his deer hunting area is just ruined.
Oh.
And his turkey area hunting is ruined.
Hey, Sparky, I need to engage with you in a moment of shallowness. What did you think about all this Tony Stewart business last weekend?
Well, you heard what come out today.
No, I didn't.
They made a new rule, NASCAR did, is you can't get out of your car, and only time you can get out of your car after an incident, they call it an incident on the track, is if you're on fire or there's smoke in the
But this little car. This little souped up go-kart on the dirt track up there, that wasn't a NASCAR sanctioned event, was it?
No, it wasn't. It's something he does as a hobby, but if you've ever seen one of those, my stepson has gone to a lot of those races, and he says it's just normal what Tony was doing going around the track. And that wing comes down on the one side, and it's just very highly doubtful that he even seen the kid coming down the track at him.
Yeah, the only thing that was suspect in all of that is the fact that he gets right by him and guns the engine and fishtails. Casual observer, that looked pretty creepy.
I know, but my stepson says that's what they do to clean the dirt off their tires when they're going around on caution lamps. You know, like how they zigzag the tires when they're doing the top. They'll gun that a little bit, and that's the way the actual way they turn the car. They don't turn the car. Those wing cars don't work the way a normal car does.
No, they just drift them, don't they?
You got to slide the back end.
Yeah.
So from what he told me, that's just kind of normal procedure. Because the first guy that went by him just barely missed him, if you look at the videotape.
And, you know, It didn't look like the kid getting out of the car was getting out of the car because he was afraid for his life. It looked like he was getting out of the car because he was kind of pissed off.
Yeah, well, his emotions got the best of him. And now with NASCAR saying you will not do that on a NASCAR race because there's places like Bristol and stuff where they get out of the car and they'll throw their helmets and stuff at the other guy's car. And they usually get fined and all that. But I don't know what they're going to do now, but suspend the team or what. I don't know what the penalty is going to be.
Just
but I mean, as far as the chase, Tony Stewart's done.
Oh, yeah, as far as the cup is concerned, yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't care, and the team doesn't care. All they worry about is they want to get Danica. I saw the interview. They want to get Danica into the chase, which ain't going to happen.
Has she won a race yet?
No, I think the best she's finished is like seventh.
She's kind of, okay, I don't mean to be too, this is probably going to get me in trouble, but she's turning into the Anna Kournikova of racing. Remember when Anna Kournikova in tennis, everybody, it was constant Anna Kournikova, but she couldn't win a freaking match.
Well, she didn't win the pole to the Daytona 500.
That's true. That is true. Didn't do her much good.
No.
Did she even finish Daytona? Can't remember.
Yeah, I think she finished 10th.
Okay. Hey, Todd and Kath have popped in. I think.
Well, they asked me to bring them in. So hopefully they'll say something.
I'll jump in here for a minute.
Well, leap right in, Roger.
The other day you were talking about a preacher down on someplace off of Highway 36 that busted his wife and called up the Humboldt County Sheriff's Department. Remember talking about that, Bob?
Yeah,
well, it never made it to the local papers.
You're kidding.
No. And I read the local paper every morning.
He punched her so damn hard her glasses broke and came off.
Well, but it never made it into the local paper. Now, the local paper no longer has a local newsroom. It's all done out of Reading. And so they take a few local stories and blend it into something that they distribute. Yeah, it's just consolidation of the media bullcrap. But anyhow,
it never made it
to local papers. And when I was listening to you, I was working, listening on my computer out by the barn, and I heard about it, and I went, whoa, it's Monday. We don't have a local paper on Monday. So on Tuesday, I looked in the paper. Wednesday, I looked in the paper. Thursday, I looked in the paper. It never made it to the local newspaper.
I'll be darned. But that you're exactly right, Roger. That's what happens with this consolidation business. I remember years ago when Clear Channel started buying up every radio station in the country. It was somewhere in the upper Midwest, maybe North Dakota. There was some sort of god-awful potential chemical hazard. I think there was a train derailment or something. And
Minot.
Was it Minot? Yeah, it was Minot, wasn't it?
I remember that.
Yeah. And they tried and tried and tried to reach a local radio station to warn people about it, and all they could get was the 800 number back to the home office in North Carolina or somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, this whole media consolidation bullshit is really screwing up the entire country.
I just checked the Reading's papers, Scripps Media Incorporated.
Is
that your paper over there, Roger?
I have no idea. Our local paper is called the Times Standard, but I know that they shut down their office here. I mean, they still have a printing facility, but as far as the reporters and all the rest of that kind of stuff, they all have to file it. It goes over to Reading. Reading makes it into a newspaper. send it back over here, it gets printed and distributed.
Mm. Well, just on the bright side, the top story on the Reading website is Texas Perry indicted for coercion.
Yeah, well, I'll see that in tomorrow morning's paper.
See, I still.
This is my tote time busy year during, you know, I am so busy this time of the year, I don't have time to deal with crap.
How's life at the farmer's market been?
Well, I was thinking about donating all everything I made yesterday to you, and it wouldn't have filled your debt.
Hmm. Sorry to hear it. You told us one evening about your asparagus pickles. At what point in time do you do those? That's spring.
That's spring. I mean, I'm standing right now in the garage looking at the asparagus, beautiful ferns, all the rest of that kind of stuff. But damn it, I'm 70 years old and I just don't have the energy to keep working so much.
You know, I hear eating a lot of asparagus might help that.
Yeah, well, I eat a lot of asparagus. But
hi, Bob. How you doing? Dunk, sorry. Just about the guys, time you guys were saying hi, I was getting a call from the local pharmacy that I had to take. They say my meds are ready, so I should be better soon.
Okay. But 11 to 14-hour days don't work for me anymore.
No, and that's what you're into with that kind of work.
Oh, yeah.
Now, if I may jump in a bit also, during, you know, one of your calls earlier this week, Bob, there was a little bit of a mention of the elements of the Democratic Party who seem to have as much Obama derangement syndrome as the Republicans do. And I was, you know, Okay, yeah, that was freaky. Sorry, I lost my train of thought there for a bit. Any of y'all remember, you know, I was going to bring up this in an email, that woman from the rules meeting back in 2008 when, you know, during the Democratic primary, when she came out screaming about, you know, oh, you know, Hillary Clinton, they're being so rough on her and the Democrats are throwing the election away. Yeah.
Well, I tell you what,
that's all Democrats are saying.
If you want a case of Clinton Obama derangement syndrome, and I mean just woo, catch her with a net, Maureen Dowd this week. All I can figure now is that she just sits on the stairs outside her apartment with a straw and a bottle of Jameson's and swigs for a while and then starts typing. I'm not even going to share it. Look it up, but you know, get the hockey puck and the duct tape out.
Okay.
She just.
Are we going to hear something, or are you going to read?
No. That's what I said. I'm not even going to read it. I'm not going to fool with it. Just if you want to see it, go read it. It is absolutely nuts. It's one of those I miss Bart Cop moments, because whenever Maureen Dowd, who he referred to as Modo, as in Komodo Dragon, Modo the Dragon Lady, he would always put, whenever he referred to anything she'd written, he'd say, she hates everybody. And apparently she does.
And also, just for anyone out there who ever hears anyone say, you know, in their company, anyone say, oh, you know, we see all those protests turn in and all that. It's like one thing, you know, whenever there's a riot involving black people and people drag out the old racist, you know,
black people acting like animals card. I always bring up Vancouver, up in Canada, Vancouver, June 2011, after that hockey game. I'm not sure if y'all remember that particular riot. Yeah, white people.
Right. Well, see, it's only a riot if black people are involved in it, Sergi. Have you not figured that out yet?
Oh, I have figured it out, but, you know, I always point to Vancouver and say, you know, what about all those, you know, white people that were busy looting and setting fires and beating, I mean, they were, like, big fights in the streets and people beating the snot out of each other. It's just like, and that was a white riot. So, you know, it's real handy to shoot down, you know, anyone who tries to track out those old, you know, 1960s era, you know, racist so-called arguments.
I've been hearing so much of that this week. It's just sickening.
Oh, hi, Haley.
Hello. Yeah, it's just been a very interesting week, and I'm just glad the weekend is here. That is all.
Yeah, it's time for the tequila and the swirly straw at this point, I think.
Well, maybe I might need some Grey Goose or something by this, and then add on all the things that happened in the news. I mean, not even the indictment of Rick Perry could save this week.
That's bad. Okay. So, just so we can all share my misery, I went and found the Modo column I was looking for. It's August 12th, Wednesday, wasn't it? Tuesday. And the name of the column is "It's the Loyalty Stupid." And it begins, remember, the news broke about Robin Williams passing away on Monday. So by Tuesday, Modo is already out there ghoulishly feasting on his dead flesh. Yeah, I think she got to it before Rush Limbaugh did. I talked to Robin Williams once about breasts. In 1993, when he played a prim British nanny in Mrs. Doubtfire, I went to interview him at his Pacific Heights house. He was 42 then, wearing his Popeye outfit, a blue-striped T-shirt, and black baggy jeans. Surrounded by kids, a rabbit, and an iguana, we talked about everything from John Belushi to his father, a stern Ford Motor Company executive. Okay, so she's going to do sort of a memento mori thing about Robin Williams, right? So blah, blah, blah. And so when I think of Robin Williams, I think of, and she mentioned this friend of hers, Michael Kelly. When I think of Williams, I think of Kelly. And you know, we're four paragraphs into this thing. When I think of Williams, I think of Kelly. And when I think of Kelly, I think of Hillary. Because Michael was the first American reporter to die in the Iraq invasion, and Hillary Clinton was one of the 29 Democratic senators who voted to authorize that baloney war. The woman who always does her homework. The woman who resigned as president of Wellesley College's Young Republicans over the Vietnam War. Made that vote without even bothering to read the National Intelligence Test. I mean, she's... all of this is true, but she's damn shrill. And then she keeps working... let's see. She gets after Hillary for what Hillary said about the Middle East. Let's see. In the season of Elizabeth Warren and Rand Paul, it's not that she's too old, despite nasty cracks on conservative websites like the Washington Free Beacon. It's that she's too old think, thrusting herself forward as a hawk at a time when hawks in the season of Elizabeth Warren and Rand Paul. Really, when's the last time ever you expected to see Elizabeth Warren and Rand Paul in any sentence other than Elizabeth Warren and Rand Paul are both members of the United States Senate? Aren't so cool. Americans are sick of the idea that we should plunge in and plant our flag. Okay, so, yeah. And then she's, Hillary booed the president. No, she didn't. Hillary never booed Barack Obama. Ever. At all. Once. Not even. just wow.
She That's America's concern, troll.
She is, yeah, that's exactly it. She is America's concern troll. And then she closes with this. After buoying Hillary, Obama is learning the truth of another unofficial slogan in politics. The Clintons will be there when they need you. God almighty. I mean, we have got a battle for the soul of the nation going on this November in the congressional elections. And I guess she's, I guess Modo's already set the way up machine for 2016.
Somebody last night accused you of being a one-trick pony.
Yeah.
Then Dowd is a one-trick pony.
Well, she's got Clinton derangement syndrome. I don't know if they took her off the Christmas card list or Hillary showed up at some function wearing the same dress as Maureen or whatever venal thing. But my God. She hates everybody. But the thing that blows my mind is you read the writing style and you're thinking, somebody gave this woman a Pulitzer?
Is that anything like a Cleveland steamer or a rusty trombone?
Shut up. You're awful. That's terrible, Todd.
Oh, and then to tell you that I live in a rural community. My new neighbor, I just recently found out, is a cop with a neighboring police department. Not the local police department, but the one in another county. He's out there apparently practicing his shooting skills because he fired off a couple of rounds and the dog was barking.
We can hear a dog barking in the background. Is that you?
Yes, that's my dog.
Did you ask him if you could see his SWAT uniform and all his paramilitary gear?
No, I don't think he would. I really don't want to associate with him that much. He might freak out when he sees me at home or something.
Speaking of that, my local police department had a little show and tell last night. I posted some pictures from the local paper. If you look at the picture, there's a officer in like a jumpsuit, fatigue cut things, and he's got all the SWAT kind of stuff. It's got one of your street sweeper tear gas launchers and, knee pads, which everybody needs, and then some other kind of gun and gas mask and all that stuff. And then the two people that are also in the picture shaking, one guy shaking the hands, an old Fox News watcher and his wife. So, the typical Marveline couple.
Oh, you mean Emery and Marveline?
Yeah, Emery and Marveline. You see that picture, Bob? I posted it in both chats. I think I did.
Let me see here. Getting it now. Oh, yeah.
But the reason they had a little get-together is they want to, because there's a ballot issue. They want to raise the sale tax a quarter cent or something like that, just for the police department.
Well, you know those little grenades that go in that cylindrical chamber, them things ain't cheap. Neither are rubber bullets. I mean, I saw the photograph today of the Christian minister who took a rubber bullet right in the navel in Ferguson.
Ouch.
She's got a hematoma the size of a softball now, and her navel is ripped open to the size of a silver dollar. Now here's what's interesting: when she got shot with the rubber bullet, she wasn't just, you know, one of the people in the crowd. She was standing out front all alone. And she was telling the police, they're leaving, they're leaving. And they shot her straight in the gut with a rubber bullet.
Well, she was the closest one. That's the easiest target to hit. I'm just saying.
Well, it looks like it was something approaching point blank.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I'm just wondering if they had the little foam earplugs in their ears, because they were using, I think they used a sound weapon there.
Yeah. Oh, they definitely used the sound weapon.
So. Yes, Kath and I were watching that the other night, Wednesday night, I think it was. Were the rubber bullets the things that actually make the whistling noise as they fly past?
No, I mean, I suppose they do make a noise, but no, those whistling things are sonic deterrent units.
Well, I know there was that. That was almost a constant high low type of. You could tell that was a tone generation thing. This one just, like I said, almost sounded like, well, yeah, Roman candles are like bottle rockets of thing on steroids.
That's the tear gas canister launching the gas to make it spin and travel.
Ah,
yeah,
okay.
And the flashbangs, too.
Mm-hmm.
The sparky, cracky things are flashbangs. And, Lottie just pointed out in the chat room, the flashbangs make a whistling noise, too.
The tear gas canisters are made to, once they hit, to spin and move in a direction that they were shot or something like that. And if you watch those, they'll just start going down the street dispensing gas. And they don't care who breathes it. What's a shot?
And by the way, this story out of Utah, speaking of police shooting, out of Utah, it occurred last Monday. 20-year-old young man, being Utah, he was white. I guess he was wanted for a probation violation. And a call was put out from a local 7-Eleven about a guy waving a gun around. Now, remember, this is Utah, where waving a gun around is a constitutional right, and you're just protecting freedom. So he comes walking out of the convenience store with his brother and his cousin. He's got headphones in, and the cops said the young man matched a description of the suspect. Three officers said they ordered him to reveal his hands. Show us your hands. Put your hands up. But they claimed he ignored the commands and was what they called visibly upset. Okay. So then they gunned him down and killed him.
Can I take a guess at a translation?
Yeah, sure.
Let's see. He matched the description, so he was black?
No, a white kid.
Oh, okay. He was visibly upset, so he was probably, you know, bouncing his head to some music. Mm. And he probably had the headphones turned up a little bit loud, so...
Well, he was with his brother, and his brother said he couldn't hear them, so he just kept walking. Then they had guns pointed at his face. That's when he turned off the music. Good move. I then saw them point guns at my brother's face, and I knew what was going to happen. One officer told Dylan Taylor to get on the ground, but another told him to put his hands on top of his head. His brother Gerald.
And the third one told him to rub his belly and pat his head at the same time.
Yeah, so his brother Gerald Taylor said he got confused. He went to pull up his pants to get on the ground, and they shot him. Meanwhile, whoever the guy was that was waving a gun around, it apparently wasn't this kid. Because his brother said he did not have a firearm.
Yeah, the guy with the gun snuck around the corner of the building behind the dumpster and was gone.
Kind of like the guy screaming the epithets in Seattle. But now what? Okay, so can we have a little understanding youth culture moment here? I have one in my house. I have occasionally walked around in public with him when he has his headphones in and he is listening to his rap music.
Shabab, we can use you. You were at an NSYNC clown posse party or concert here not too long ago.
Oh,
you
no,
don't
no.
have to use Ferg.
Okay. Well, no. I got to use Ferg, but because I was at an ICP thing, that does mean I'm at least a little bit hip for a 50-year-old. Okay. No, who are we kidding? I ain't hip. But no, I've been walking on the streets of D.C. with Ferg. And I don't, yeah, for starters,
yeah, these young people and their headphones, I don't get it.
For starters, when I'm in a city, or anywhere except sitting down pretty much, I don't use headphones. I don't use the little earbuds, cans, what have you. I mean, I'll use them on an airplane to deaden the sound. Just as passive sound suppressors, because the roar gets kind of old after a while, and I have frequent earaches and everything from what I do anyway. But I can be walking. It's happened in D.C. We're walking down a city street on the sidewalk, and Ferg is, I mean, he looks like he's got St. Vitus dance. And, you know, he's with the arm gestures and the lips are moving, and we've kind of had arguments about this. You know, with the old man telling him, listen, you're in a city situation, and even if it is a perfectly nonviolent city, you still have to be aware of the traffic, and you're not aware of the traffic if you got the stupid things in your ears. All right, Dad. But
you know,
but to the ordinary passerby, he looks like he's in the middle of a seizure. And I'm not making fun of people with seizure disorders. So kid comes out of the 7-Eleven, and he's got his headphones in, and he's 20 years old, and there's a picture of him, and, you know, and this is not to say that he's listening to, you know, Cop Killer or something. He's just, you know, he's working, you know, he's with the beat, man. And the cop says, well, he was visibly upset. I'm sorry, Kathy, what were you going to say?
No, just about headphones and walking in them. Years ago, I mean, like, I probably was 21, so I'm not going to say how many years ago, but it was a long time ago. And where I was working, one of the customers that came in was related to the owner, and he was a detective, and he had a young family, and he was in Columbus on training, and he had recently lost a lot of weight, so he would go out every morning and walk. And he was walking, doing his normal thing in the city of Columbus on a beautiful morning, and had headphones in, listening while he was walking. And somebody who's totally aware of their surroundings, he was a detective, and he did look, but he didn't see. He just didn't see the car, and the car killed him. You know, he stepped in front of it, and because he didn't hear it. His vision missed the car, and he was killed. And it's just so useless, whatever, when something like that happens. I mean, you got to be aware when you're walking out, and I tell Todd all the time, watch for your headphones, because. So that's just my statement about those.
Can I make an observation?
Do please.
Aren't Beat headphones the new Michael Jordan tennis shoes?
Yes, and Apple just bought them.
Yes. For how much?
Oh, billions. And Ben Birch, I think, probably bought his first Apple product directly from Steve Jobs or something. And he was so upset by that purchase, he said, I'm very close to becoming a former Apple customer.
Yeah, but I mean...
And how appropriate that they bought these, because these, what, they're like $50 headphones being sold for $300 because they have that douchebag Dr. Dre's name on them. How appropriate, style over stuff.
Well, you look...
Apple away.
You look at all the publicity they get on. They show NFL teams getting off the bus, going into the stadium as visitors, you know, or even the home team going in every Sunday, going in to play the football game, and half the guys got Beats headphones on. Colin Kaepernick is one that wears them all the time.
Yeah, see, I think... I'm just going to, and maybe the other audio nerds in the Horn Family Commune congregation will take issue with me. I think in-ear monitors are so much cooler. And I mean, I've got a pair of them here because I've got a very dear friend who is a hearing aid audiology sales guy, runs a shop, and he takes care of me. But, you know, you gotta really want these things. Because first of all, I don't know about anybody else, but I can't stand... Back when I was a little kid doing community theater and stuff, and they would come to do my stage makeup, I hated anybody screwing with my eyes. The thing I hate second worst, is anybody screwing with my ears. And so you got to really want him, because you lean over, and he sticks a little piece of cotton with a couple of threads on it way down inside your ear. And then he mixes up these chemicals, and he uses a syringe to inject your ear canal full of this vile goo. And then he does the other ear. And so there you are. You can't hear a lick. And then it sets up, and using the two little strings hanging out of your ear, he pulls them out. They send them off to the company, and the company makes your in-ear monitors. And they really, first of all, you know, you can spend $500 on a pair of active noise cancellation earphones for airplanes and stuff like that. You buy these things, there's no battery power, you just stick them in your ears, and you can't hear anything but what's coming through them.
That's what NASCAR drivers use.
Because they're better.
Mm-hmm.
But under no circumstances, well, A, I'm a klutz, so if I was, you know, if I was coming off of an airplane, you know, in my really hip going to visit somewhere, game day clothes or whatever, I would fall over my own feet and bust my face just because I was listening to, but the music can overtake you, whatever, and the next thing you know, three cops, one of them screamed, "Put your hands in the air," the other one said, "Get on the ground," and the third one just blows your brains out.
Yeah, I've seen another brand of, I guess, designer earphones, for lack of a better term. It's called Skull Candies. And I couldn't figure out what they were talking about at first. I guess that means I'm just getting a little older.
Well, but Skull Candies, not exactly even what I, you know, they'll go down in the ear and they've got the little gels. But these things actually are... it's just like a hearing aid. They are impressions of your inner ear. So when you, the only person on God's green earth they will fit is you. And in point of fact, I'm on my second pair now because the little Belgian bastard that skipped away got my first pair. I hope you had fun. I hope you got them stuck in your freaking ears, you little prick. Sorry. All better now.
Howdy.
Hey,
howdy.
Larry.
I just want to say hello before the Friday in the Front Porch goes away, but I've been listening. Okay.
Well, we knew you were there. We knew you were there, Larry, and hope you're having a good evening.
Thank you.
Oh, hey, awesome news just came in. Sparky, we also met your Pull the Pin Challenge, and particularly just got a really kind contribution from Henry, who took it down to zero and a little bit more. So that's wonderful. Thank you very kindly, Henry. Thank you very, very much.
Bob, how much are those in-ear monitors that you got?
You can get, and that's the other, that's the other thing I was going to mention. If you go out there and buy brand name like Beats or whatever, you're going to get beat. These, I think, this was just like a single channel in each ear. And I think they were $125, $150 or so. Of course, this is a very, very dear old friend, so he didn't make me do that. But they can go up to $500 and $600 a pair if you want the ones that, like, rock stars use.
Yeah, I'm interested in getting some that will also, you know, when I go out and I'm around loud music or loud anything, I'll be able to protect my ears.
Well, the other thing you can do, and I would look for a particular brand. You know, you're out in civilization, Larry. I would look for a purveyor of Starkey hearing aids. Because most Starkey dealers can also provide you with something that are simply called sound suppressors. And they're just like the little foam things that Sparky was talking about that you cram down in your ears, only they only fit you and they do a much better job. So my buddy uses his when he's mowing his grass or doing his weed eating or, you know, I know people
his
who
wife
are...
His wife is snoring.
Okay. I didn't... No,
I didn't
see,
say that.
No, you didn't. And you know what? Women don't snore.
No.
As a guy who's been married for 20 years, I can tell you that my right. wife does not snore. She purrs.
That's right.
Oh, that's one reason why I have the sleep apnea equipment. It's because of snoring.
Me
because
too.
I don't want to go into it, but I was very loud.
But if you want to save a little bit of money, Larry, just go onto one of these dealers and getting the impressions made and getting a pair of sound suppressors. It's the same principle. It's an ear mold that you just stick in there and wow, you can't hear diddly. You can either get them vented or unvented. Unvented, you are absolutely like a post. Vented, you can hear a little bit.
Okay. So it would certainly make going to shows, I don't go to shows anymore, but it would certainly make going to shows a lot easier.
Yeah, well, I can well imagine. And I guess I'm going to have to send a bill to the Starkey people for the unsolicited ad this evening.
Uh-oh.
By the way, what is it $150 a night that it takes to be able to, for fundraisers for the show, or is it $150 per week?
It's per night. We took all the, well, I didn't do this. In fact, our buddy Tom from Richmond did this. We took all the bills and divided them by the average number of broadcast days, and it came out to $150.
Okay.
So, you know.
No inflation yet.
Well,
so if you get 15 of us giving $10, that covers the average amount.
Yeah, for an evening.
But we're good to go for tonight, right?
Yeah, we're good to go for tonight. We filled in the hole, and actually we're standing up on top of a little bit of a molehill now.
So do you think Rick Perry is going to go to jail for all this, or do you think they're just going to...
Okay, let me get out my moth-eaten velvet robe with the tattered moon and star appliques and the...
Okay, that's a stupid question.
No. And the magic eight ball that's cracked on the bottom and always says, answer hazy, ask again later. Here's what's going to happen. He will go all the way to trial with this. He will be convicted. The judge, the trial court judge, will refuse a new trial and refuse to overturn the verdict, and then it will be taken up to an intermediate level of appeal in Texas because they have intermediate courts of criminal appeals, and the verdict will be upheld at the intermediate criminal court of appeals level. Then it will go to the Texas Supreme Court, who will overturn the conviction. Barring that, it will be overturned by some right-wing Bush, Reagan, Bush appointee federal judge in Texas, and Rick Perry will never see the inside of a prison cell.
And maybe we'll never have to hear about him again?
Right. See, that's the, this is basically the legal equivalent of putting a horse's head in his bed.
Okay. Now, will that help Wendy Davis?
One hopes. But the other thing is, Greg Abbott will counter campaign that this is done for purely partisan hack political reasons to try to keep him from protecting Texas family values from that god-awful woman who wants everybody to go and have an abortion.
And, of course, everybody in Texas that has a brain, and I'm sure that there are quite a few million, know that that's a bunch of horse hockey or...
Yeah.
They all know it's horse hockey.
Well, see, as Sergi has already told us, Larry, Wendy will probably win all the metro areas. You know, whether it be Metro San Antonio, Metro Dallas, Fort Worth, Metro Houston, Metro Austin, Metro El Paso, Metro. The trouble always comes with the deeply, deeply, deeply hyper ultra family values, dumber than dirt conservatives out in the hinterlands.
Yeah, but if he's sitting in the White House, are they going to come in there and haul him off jail?
He ain't going to see the White House.
No, I'm talking about Greg Abbott.
No, I'm talking about Rick Perry.
Yes, they could, because this would not be a crime committed during the time that he was president of the United States.
And does this take the idea of secession off the table?
I don't know that it takes it off the table, but it's no help because these are not federal charges; these are state charges. Texas could secede until hell won't hold them, but it's a state charge, so the charges are going with them.
Bob, I was on a call last night, and they called me. It was a private number, and it was a conference town hall meeting with one of the people who's running for my assembly district. And I asked a couple questions, and I'm sitting there listening. And he had a couple of callers that asked some really good questions, and then they hung up on me. And I don't know whether or not it was my line or their line, but I couldn't get back on the call, and I'm wondering if they decided that my questions or that they didn't have time, or if the thing just went off, or if, you know, because...
Well, it could be absent further data, Larry. It could be anything. But if you were asking pain-in-the-ass questions, yeah, they'll dump you.
Oh, well, I wasn't. Or at least I don't think I was, but, you know, sometimes I don't see myself doing myself, you know. I don't know. I'm trying to tell you. Sometimes I don't look at myself at like other people look at me. So, you know, I don't know what happened, but I would have liked to have at least stayed on the call so I would have heard the other people's questions, because they ask good questions. You know, so in any case, that's what happened. All right, thank you.
No worries. I guess it's time to get out of here. It's about 5 minutes before the hour. Thanks to a wonderful Friday on the Front Porch roundtable of ordinary, extraordinary American experts. Thank you, Haley. Thank you, Todd and Kath. Good to hear from you, Kath. I always love hearing from you. You
she
too,
says
Todd.
Thanks, Mac. She's just off to the drugstore to pick up my meds.
Okay.
She'll be better in a little while.
Yeah, be careful with the earbuds, Todd, will you? Thank you.
What?
I said be careful with the earbuds, like she was talking about.
What?
Who? Where?
I'm sorry. Please go ahead.
No. I know what I'm being played with. And thank you, Roger, for chiming in this evening. Hope dinner's delicious. Sergi, I'm glad I could make August, Christmas in August for you. Larry, thanks for chiming in late and listening all evening. And, of course, thank you very kindly, Sparky, for all you do to, A, keep the horn going, and, B, moderate both in the chat room and the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. The Horn Molloy Skype chat group will get going at 12:05 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time immediately after Molloy this evening, and it'll be a rousing, rockin', rollin' conversation, as it so often is. If you've never been to the Horn Molloy Skype chat group, all in the world you have to do is send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, on Skype, and you can be part of the ongoing conversation among a roundtable of extraordinary, ordinary American experts. Thanks very much to all of you who got us out of the hole and got us up on a little molehill this evening. Thank you, Sparky, for the pull the pin challenge. Thank you to Dan. Thank you, Dan, for the Syracuse Invitational Challenge. Thank you for everyone who responded. Thank you, Haley. Thank you, Jim. Got to scroll down. Thank you, Diane. Thank you, Thomas. Thank you, Robert. And thank you to Sal and to Greg and to Asa. Thank you, one and all. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff who have been with us for so very long. Thank you to Sparky and Lottie and Texas Betsy in the Horn chat room, moderators there. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you, John Fox. John's got an awesome gig this weekend. Thank you, John Fox, out on the road. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Since 2002, Ben's been saving progressive radio on the Internet, and he never sends a bill. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHEACT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Really, have a great weekend, everybody. Back.